It's coming.
Senator Pogerbiller.
Morning, Mr. President.
Morning.
I'd like to move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
Beyond the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Dr. David Van Dyke from the House of Hope Presbyterian Church in St. Paul.
Let us pray. God, whom we seek in times of joy, God, whom we seek in times of need, God, whom we know by many different names, we offer you our heartfelt thanks for this day and for the wonder and goodness of your creation. How grateful we are to live in this land of freedom and opportunity and still so much promise. Match, O God, our deep gratitude for the freedoms we enjoy with a sense of responsibility for cherishing and protecting those freedoms, ensuring that they are available to all and enjoyed by all. Make each of us good stewards of all that has been entrusted to our care, the good of the state, the welfare of others, and the fairness and justice necessary for a good and decent society to function. Remind us that we are stewards of all that is, stewards of the earth, stewards of one another, stewards of our heritage, our institutions, stewards of our children, and stewards of the future that the children who will come long after we are gone will inherit. May those serving the people in high office in this state be courageous. May they be willing to listen. May they be open to new visions and demonstrate a willingness to work toward shared dreams as together they work toward the common good for those in Minnesota and beyond. These things we ask in your holy name. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Flats, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Perry, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. Pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Anderson moves that the following members be excused for conference committee on Senate File 3275 at 11 a.m. Senator Anderson, Fredrickson, Chaudhry, Saxog, and Rummel. Messages from the House. All right, excuse me, on the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate file numbers 2885 and 3019, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 341, a bill for an act relating to health, modifying provisions for disposition of a deceased person. Senate file 341 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file 341 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator Solon, a brief description of the bill and what changes were made that we didn't see.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. This is a bill that passed the Senate last year. It was passed by the House this year. The only, and it is the two of the 515 laws from Project 515. Final Wishes is the one that I was carrying that allowed partners to be able to make decisions about the death of their partner. And then there was another piece that allowed a surviving partner to be able to sue for wrongful death. The only thing that changed in the bill... was to indicate that partners were two people. I urge your support for the bill.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pretner Solon, could you tell me the definition of domestic partners in regard to your bill?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, domestic partners are persons who are of the same sex. They're adults and mentally competent to enter into legally binding contracts. They have resumed responsibility for each other's basic common welfare, financial obligations, and well-being. They share a common domicile and primary residence with each other on a permanent basis. They have a committed interdependent relationship with each other and intend to continue that relationship indefinitely and do not have this type of relationship with any other person. They are not married to another person and have not entered into a domestic partnership arrangement that is currently in effect, and they are not related by blood or adoption so that a marriage between them would be prohibited. And Mr. President, I would like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator Solon.
I move that the call be dispensed with and the sergeant in arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pretner Solon renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 341 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Ingebretson.
Would the Senator yield for a question, please?
She will yield. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Or is it President? I'm sorry.
President.
Mr.
Yeah.
President. Senator, I'm wondering, is it fair to say that this is a, when you talk about domestic partner, this is a, I think you may have answered Senator Limmer's question that it, is there some legal definition of domestic partner or, I'm sorry, I wasn't here or not paying attention or was someplace else when you had that, but could you give me what is considered the legal definition of domestic partner?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. President, Senator Ingebretson, I'll repeat. For the purposes of this bill, domestic partners are persons who are the same sex. They're adults and mentally competent to enter into legally binding contracts. They have assumed responsibility for each other's basic common welfare, financial obligations, and well-being. They share a common domicile and primary residence with each other on a permanent basis. They have a committed, interdependent relationship with each other and intend to continue that relationship indefinitely, and they do not have this type of relationship with any other person. They are not married to another person and have not entered into a domestic partnership arrangement that is currently in effect, and they are not related by blood or adoption, so that a marriage between them would be prohibited.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, and so basically, how Is it some sort of a legal action that's taken to establish a domestic partnership? Then is that what happens in Minnesota? Is there some statute that covers that?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, no. This is a definition that is provided for this provision in statute.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President and Senator. So really, how is this any different than being a hypothetical situation, a roommate, for instance? Aren't we kind of going down that path here? Should there be some short-term relationships that might somewhat hinder, I think, the intention of your situation here, where we might have a roommate situation for just a short period of time? Is there a time limit on this before they're able to declare themselves a domestic partner, to be able to handle these types of situations?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, no. It indicates that it's a long-term relationship, but this is a definition that is in common usage where benefits are provided for domestic partners.
Secretary, we'll give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 341, a bill for an act relating to health, modifying provisions for disposition of a deceased person, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. We had 41 ayes, 21 nays. Bill is passed. Its title agreed to.
Next message is on Senate File 2702, Senator Berglund. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2702, a bill for an act relating to health establishing licensure for birth centers. Senate File 2702 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Berglund.
I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2702 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Berglund motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File Number 3833, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
First reading of House bills.
House File Number 3833, a bill for an act relating to education, providing for policy and funding for early childhood through grade 12 education, including general education, etc.
First reading and the bill will be referred to the Finance Committee. First reading. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports in the agenda be now adopted, except for the reports related to appointments.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd move that the report from the Committee on Higher Education referring to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next order of business is second reading of House bills. There's one printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are 3 printed on today's agenda. Without objection, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Under next order of business is motions and resolutions. There's 1 author's motion printed on today's agenda. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Under resolutions, there's 1 printed on today's agenda and 1 to be read at the desk.
Senator Pogemiller introduces Senate Resolution 195, a Senate resolution relating to rules.
Both of these be referred to the Rules Committee. Conference Committee. Remaining under motions, there's a Conference Committee report, Senate File 2918, Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and Conference Committee report on Senate File 2019 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee.
Okay, Senator Betzel, tell the Senate a little bit about the bill. We went through it the other day, but what changes were made in the conference?
Well, Mr. President, it's a 238-page bill, so I don't think I want to tell a little bit about the bill, but I will discuss the changes. This is the Omnibus Pensions Bill, and given the fact that this is a bill that was worked on by the Pensions Commission from last June forward, almost a year in the making, and it was produced mainly by the Pensions Commission. The bill is pretty much the same as it was heard in this body before. There were a couple of minor changes in here. The first change is the fact that we have deferred annuity rates for people who have retired but haven't started drawing on their pension yet. We just had different effective dates between the two bodies, and that's just because after the bill was processed by the Senate, the funds decided that they needed a slightly different effective dates for that. So that was really not a substantive change in there. Another change was the fact that we had an early retirement incentive that we actually adopted last, I think it was June, in the Pension Commission. But what was in this bill was inconsistent with that early retirement incentive bill that we passed last Saturday that Senator Cohen had in a conference committee. So because that was actually a better proposal, and it was one that the governor indicated he would sign, we did not need this provision in this bill. And as I say, it would have been inconsistent if it would have stayed in there. So that was deleted from the bill in the Pensions Commission. As you may recall, we had provisions dealing with MRF, the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund. The House had a provision, which was a pretty good idea, which sets a minimum and a maximum amount for the employers to contribute to MRF, mainly so that the state actually does not wind up having to be the one that solely would have to pay for this cost. But so they, going forward, they would... it was set for the supplemental contribution by the employers a minimum of $27 million and a maximum of $34 million after fiscal year 2011 for the various employers. We also changed the amount of the state contribution. The state contribution was going to be $27.5 million starting in fiscal year 13. We split that up to $13.75 million in fiscal year 12, fiscal year 13.75 million in fiscal year 13. So it's the same amount, it's just in 2 years. But going forward, instead of having $27.5 million, it'd be $15 million. So we actually lowered the cost of the state contribution to MRF. Another item that was actually heard by the Pensions Commission, but was not included in the original bill, we spent a bit of time hearing from a Minsky employee in Austin, Minnesota. Her job classification was changed, and she wanted to buy back some pension credits. She couldn't do that because of the change in her status. So she's now given the opportunity to have buy it back at full actuarial cost. Again, we spent quite a bit of time in the Pension Commission. It just wasn't put in the bill, but they worked out the details in the other body, and that's why it's in here. There was another amendment over in the House that is similar to what we've done in the past. If you have University of Minnesota employees and the police and employees of the University of Minnesota covered by the MSS General and MSRS General and University of Police employees and PERA Police and Fire, if they're put on furlough, then they can buy back the time period in their pensions. And we've done that with other plans as well, too. Finally, two other items. We had a change in the vesting time period for the correction employees. There were some nurses who worked for the corrections department that were concerned that by increasing the vesting time from 3 years to 10 years, they have a lot of turnover there, and so we changed and they would not be having any opportunity to have any vesting for their pensions. So instead of just a straight 10 years to requirement vesting, we have sort of a phase in where after five, if they've worked there 5 years, they can get 50% of a pension. If they've been 6 years, 60% of a pension. 7 years, 70%, and so forth, all the way to 10 years. And that's consistent with what we already have in the police and fire anyway. And the final item was the fact that the other body did have a study on whether we should start the conversion or start having a study on defined contribution plans. We had a floor amendment offered by Senator Hand that was defeated to just implement that right now. This actually studies the issue. It is going to be studied by the major funds. They are to report back to the Pensions Commission by June 1st of 2011, which would be after next year's session, but given the fact that a lot of work is done by the Pension Commission over the interim, and the fact that the actuaries who have to prepare this are going to be busy preparing their reports for next year's Pension Commission up until December, it wouldn't be ready, frankly, by the start of the 2011 session. So the time is right for that. There was some concerns about whether or not the study is going to it should even be done or not, but frankly, around here, we study a lot of things, and if it's something that some people have an interest in, which there seem to be, we just felt that that was something that we should have in the bill here. So, Mr. President and members, that's a summary of the changes in the Pensions Commission bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members, and I want to thank Senator Betzhold and members of the Pension Commission and also the members of the Conference Committee. I know that there's been a lot of work done on this issue. It's important work, and I appreciate the fact that in the Conference Committee there was an effort to put into the bill the language that requires this issue about defined contribution versus defined benefits to be studied, and I appreciate that. However, members, I still would raise the same point that we had the very lengthy discussion on a few days ago about this bill. I think there's a pretty good understanding in the world today about the difference between defined benefit and defined contribution. And while I appreciate the effort of the Pension Commission to try to slow down the growth in the obligations that we are assuming under the pension structure that we have today, the fact of the matter is that these are economically unsustainable. There is no possible way they can be made to work. And we need to make sure that we change this and reduce that obligation going over in the future. And so, members, I would urge that we reject this bill so that we continue to put the focus on changing the structure of pensions to be defined contribution rather than defined benefit. Thank you.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to just remind members that this conference committee report is the result of about 10 months' worth of bipartisan work on behalf of the Pension Commission. And one of the pension principles has to do with adequacy of benefits at retirement. And it states that benefit adequacy requires that retirement benefits respond to changes in the economy. And I'm really pleased to say that the work of this conference committee certainly addresses that area. This is a reflection of shared sacrifice, and public employee benefits are a part of that sacrifice. And the bill has the effect of reducing the retirement benefits to public employees. In the absence of this bill, there's no reduction in those benefits. And I'm, while it is disheartening that we have to discuss minimizing and cutting back on retirement benefits, many of us know that in the private sector, those very same discussions are happening. And so I just want to make the point that there are indeed changes and frankly reductions that are contained within this bill that are in line with the pension principles.
Senator M. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I would also like to thank my fellow members of the Pension Commission and the members of the Pension Conference Committee, who worked really hard to find, I think, an overall solution for the state that's going to save taxpayers money. If we don't pass this bill, we are going to end up, as Senator Lynch and Senator Betzold have said, with a default that is actually going to be more expensive for taxpayers. And the reason that we have this option available for us in the bill is because of the hard work done by the pensions commissions themselves reaching out to the members, and the members' willingness to look at reductions in benefits and go along with those to save taxpayers money, knowing how difficult times are. I voted against this bill initially, which was very hard for me to do because I recognize all the hard work, simply because I was concerned about the amount of money, that the percentage of the state money going into the MRF fund. But it's very important that we have a solution for MRF, and I'm very happy with the solution that's been brought back from the conference committee, because it in my mind recognizes a fairer distribution based on the responsibilities of the relative parties here who need to be funding MRF. And again, all of these, if we don't take these actions that are being proposed now, not only are we going to have higher percentages of increases go into effect under the default in our legal system, but we're also going to have a much more expensive and difficult problem to correct down the road. So for the long-term fiscal health of our state, as well as for the security of the people who are affected by these pensions, I strongly urge you to support this bill.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to assure members that there are no benefit increases in this pension bill. There are no benefit increases. On the contrary, there are contribution increases required for both the employee and the employer in order to improve the solvency of the system. COLAs are reduced, cost of living adjustments are reduced to either 0% or in half. This is a very, very, very responsible pension bill. And we also, Senator Hyand, do require the pension groups to do a study of what it would cost the state and what would be the impact of converting from defined benefit to defined contribution plans. There is reform in this bill. Please vote for it.
Further discussion. Senator Betzold renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations of the conference committee report on Senate File 2918 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Well, motion prevails. Senator Sinjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Bedsole yield?
He will yield, Senator.
Or, for that matter, anybody else. I don't doubt at all that a lot of good work was put into this bill, and maybe in normal times it would be a good bill, and maybe it's a good bill even given our situation. But we do have a reality before us, and that is that we don't have any money. And as I look at the $13.75 million and the the money to follow that, the $15 million, as we think about where that's going to come, well, maybe I'll just ask the question this way. Are there any costs here related to the supplemental budget that we're going to have to be dealing with over the course of the next day or two that we're going to have to book into this pension bill to make it work?
Senator Betzold.
Or is this deferred until 12-13?
Yeah. Mr. President, Senator Sinjum, this has no impact whatsoever on the current biennium. And we recognize that. There was nothing to do this one. I wish we could have avoided any future costs. We currently do pay $9 million a year in the state government budget bill to MRF and some other appropriations to some of the other funds. So it's not unprecedented. As I said, we actually brought the future costs down. Do I like doing this? No. But on the other hand, MRF in particular is going to run out of money in 5 to 7 years and some drastic action. And we're not just doing this by ourselves. As I said, the other contributors, the city of Minneapolis in particular, the Minneapolis School District also, and some of the other employees in the city of Minneapolis are increasing their obligations up to $22 million. And so this is a shared sacrifice across the board. But to directly answer your question, no, it has no impact in the current biennium.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, just want to stand and thank Senator Betzold and the committee members that I serve with on the pension committee. You might laugh, but actually I enjoy it, that committee. Yes. So, Senator Betzold, you run a very good committee, and I thank you for your fairness in that entire process. And we have worked very hard on this bill. It's been a long process for all these pensions to come together and figure out a process and a solution to this issue that we have. I voted against this bill coming out because I felt like there needed to be some more refinement on the bill. We still have some COLA increases in some of the pension funds, but I do believe that the conference committee did do some good work, and I do plan on voting for this bill, but I'll leave it up to the rest of my members to figure out what they would like to do. It is a big cost to the state. We realize that, but we are in a corner. And so, again, I want to thank all the people that have worked on this pension bill, and I look forward to serving on the committee again.
We'll give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2918, a bill for an act relating to retirement, various retirement plans, increasing certain contribution rates, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. Excuse me, there being 52 ayes, 14 nays, the bill is passed and title agreed to. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 3263 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 3263, a bill for an act relating to traffic regulations, modifying provisions governing speed limits in highway work zones, etc. House File 3263 is herewith transmitted to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 3263 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay, Senator Gimsey, a brief description of the bill and what changes were made in the conference committee.
Mr. President, this bill is the work zone speed reduction bill in highways that currently have a speed limit of 60 miles per hour, getting them down to 40 miles per hour. It also includes a Senator Carlson's provision for a passenger restraint exemption relating to Type 3 school buses. And in the conference committee, we also added language that would require that the driver's license instruction manual be revised to encourage drivers to stay to the right in multi-lane highways.
Further discussion? Senator Gimsey renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations of the Conference Committee and House File 3263 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee. Hi, I see you. How are you?
Will Senator Gimsey yield?
You will yield.
Senator Gimsey, is there something in this bill that would increase surcharges on traffic citations, traffic ticket fines?
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. President, there is nothing specifically in this bill that would increase the any type of fines or surcharges, but I believe that it would capture more of those people who are it would capture more of those people who are actually traveling at higher speeds in those work zone areas.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator Gimsey, why is it in the title of your bill then?
Senator Gimsey. I guess it's not the new title at the end. I think it's the delete all amendment. Senator Gimsey.
Well, that's correct, yeah. Mr. Chair. Yeah. Mr. President.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, it appears in the original title of the bill, but if you look at the end of the conference committee report, it says delete the title and insert, and so there's a new title of the bill.
Yeah, that's what we tried to say. Any further discussion? Senator Gimsey renews his motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevailed. Senator Sony.
Mr. President, Senator Betzel, maybe you can direct me to that because the conference committee report I'm looking at says modifying provisions governing speed limits in highway work zones, operating vehicles on multi-lane roads, and surcharges on traffic citations. Okay.
Got it. Third reading. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 3263, a bill for an act relating to traffic regulations, modifying provisions related to highway work zone speeds, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Senator, come to order. Senator Porgemiller.
Mr. President, is there a privileged report at the desk?
There's a privileged report at the desk.
Senator Porgemiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 2702, Senators Berglund, Lynch, Lori, Pretner, Solon, and Dill. Senator Porgemiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Porgemiller.
Mr. President, members, we're going to recess now to the call of the chair. The Health and Human Service Conference Committee report, I believe, will be processed by the House sometime today. It's a House file, and we would like to process that also. So they have their 12-hour rule, which I believe started about 9 or 9:30 this morning. So any member of the Senate who could encourage members of the House to be willing to process that bill earlier on the House floor would expedite our situation. So that'll be the key thing we take up later tonight. So I'm guessing we'll be here this evening late. The Rules Committee at 3 o'clock. If one thing I could mention to members, if the House does not come to an agreement to move that bill earlier, then as Senator Olson pointed out, perhaps there's a large gap in the middle of the day here where people would be free to accomplish things that they would otherwise accomplish at 9 or 10 at night. But not including dinner with wine, but certainly dinner or going home to your family or something. So we'll keep you informed, though, as best we know. Move to recess to call chair. Rules Committee at 3 o'clock.
The motion is to recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands in recess.
Madam President.
The Senate will come to order. Senator Porgemiller.
Madam President, I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
The Senate is under call.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under roll call be dispensed with. The Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
Okay, on the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Messages right away. Messages from the House.
Messages on Senate File 3361, Senator Scheid. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments and concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 3361, a bill for an act relating to real property transfers. Senate File 3361 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 3361 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, on the Scheid motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has exceeded the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of five members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate File 2702, a bill for an act relating to health, establishing licensure for birth centers. There has been appointed as such a committee on the part of the House Representatives Rood, Tau, Lane, Abler, and Reinhart. Senate File 2702 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File Number 2918 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 2918, a bill for an act relating to retirement, various retirement plans. Senate File 2918 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 3081 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 3081, a bill for an act relating to energy, modifying community-based energy development program. Senate File 3081 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. Next message is on House File 910, Senator Betzold. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 910, a bill for an act relating to notaries public. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of three members be appointed thereon. Representatives Hortman, Jackson, and Murdoch have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 910 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, I move the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 910 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Senator Betzold, motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
What are we doing with it? And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File number 3834, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
First reading. This bill will be referred to the first reading of House bills.
House File 3834, a bill for an act relating to state government requiring the Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget to provide a cash flow forecast to the governor and legislature.
Okay. First reading. Be referred to the Committees on Rules and Administration. Reports of committees. There's one to be read at the desk.
Senator Pogemiller from the Committee on Rules and Administration, to which was referred Senate Resolution Number 195, a Senate resolution relating to rules applying certain provisions of Permanent Rule 7 to unofficial engrossment of House files. Reports the same back with the recommendation that the resolution do pass.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President.
Motion to adopt.
I move the adoption of the committee report just read.
Okay. On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move to lay
Resolution 195.
Resolution 195 on the table.
On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The Anderson House File
20. Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that joint rule 2.06 be suspended as it relates to conference committee report on Senate File 3275.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I yield to Senator Anderson then.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 3275 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay, Senator Anderson, a description of the bill and what changes were made in the conference committee.
All right, Mr. President, thank you. This was the Omnibus Environment and Natural Resources and Energy bill and had a large number of different provisions. We've divided it into articles, so I'll just go through article by article and touch on the differences, the major differences between the House and Senate and not all the other stuff. Article 1 is the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and this relates to the Lessard-Sams funding recommendations. There were no differences between the House and Senate on the funding recommendations. There were some minor language differences, and we reconciled all of those. One thing I would point out in language is on page 13, the match requirements. We did reach a compromise so that the match requirement for grants would be a little easier for smaller grants of under $100,000, and allow for some in-kind contributions to help with the match. Other provisions related to the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the House had something called restoration audits that they wanted to check in on how land restorations were being done. We ended up with a compromise called restoration technical evaluation panels, which will consist not of the legislative auditor, but rather of technical experts, scientists, and others who will review restorations on the land and make sure that they're meeting the outcomes intended. We did repeal the definitions of protect, restore, and enhance that were in adopted in last year's conference committee and were quite contentious. So we were very pleased that the House was willing to repeal those, and we did put in some language you'll see on page 25 that guides us to follow the language of the Constitution in determining how to allocate funds. And the Heritage Council will, the Lessard-Sams Council will be doing that as well. The House had put in a provision that changed the site visit exception to the open meeting law for the Lessard-Sams Council. We reached a compromise on that. Clarifies that visits can occur, but no decisions or agreements can be made, essentially. The House had some restrictions on transferring, on buying lands that were already protected, and we have some compromise language on that on page 27 of the bill. The House also had proposed a land management fee, which would have required fees to be escrowed to manage land that's set aside for public use and protection. And we instead are seeking recommendations from some state agencies to advise us on how to ensure that those land management costs are covered into the future. Article 2 begins on page 29. That's the Clean Water Fund. We did expand the Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee to 11 counties to reflect our new water monitoring program in the 11-county metropolitan area. The main differences in the clean water area were some funding changes. When we left, the Senate, we had a 5% reserve in the funds and $5 million appropriated for our 11-county groundwater monitoring program. What we agreed to do, the House had some spending in other areas. We agreed to do some of their spending, and we deferred $1 million of the $5 million to 2012 so that we could maintain a good budget reserve and not expand our spending this year. And so we were able to put some more money into some Bowser grants for water protection in the metropolitan area and in greater Minnesota for riparian buffers and for wellhead protection for groundwater. All of those programs were incredibly popular and oversubscribed since last year's bill was passed, so we were glad to put some more money into those. We also created a micro-grant program, and this stemmed from Senator Mary Olson's Star Lakes proposal, and this will allow small nonprofit groups to apply for grant funds, and they'll be able to grant them out to small for very small projects, very small grants to lake associations and others who want to work on very local cleaning up their lakes or rivers projects. And we expect that'll be a very popular program. Article 3, general provisions on page 39 relate to all the legacy funds. We clarified that the legislative auditor can pay for the audits, the financial audits of the legacy funds, and we set a deadline so that we will have a logo that represents all of the four legacy funds by this fall so that all projects and all spending coming from those funds has an identifiable marker on it so the public knows what we're doing with that money, and that's very important for transparency and accountability. The legislative guide that was also rather contentious that the House had put in last year, we've repealed that to the Senate and to the Council, and just the House committee will continue to have their guide. Article 4, Environment and Natural Resources, begins on page 42. It's a lot of similar language. I'll just highlight a couple of differences. Senator Scoy had a bill related to utility crossing fees. We made some modifications to that and found a compromise between the House and Senate that keeps the budget whole and reduces the fees. Let's see. We did accept, we compromised with the House on a provision that they had that required everyone to not only drain their boats when they leave a lake, but also to drain their bait buckets. And we didn't accept the part about the bait buckets, but we did clarify under current law, you're not allowed to dump your bait in a lake or waters of the state. So that's clarified, and you do need to drain your boats. And let's see. We had a provision that Senator Chaudhry had proposed, naming a snowmobile or motorized vehicle trail after former Senator Becky Laurie, and we decided instead to name it after her son, Matthew Laurie, and Senator Laurie's brother, who we lost in Iraq. And I thought we all thought that was a very fitting tribute. Let's see. We had a compromise on park passes for disabled and other veterans. We accepted a House provision for rowing teams so they didn't have to have flotation devices. Let's see. On we accepted a House provision relating to SSTS, Septic Systems Task Force for them, and we also created a compromise between the delay provisions from Senator Scogin's bill that sets a deadline for the PCA to come up with their rules for SSTS compliance, but allows counties 10 months to complete their rulemaking, and all of that would occur within the next 2 years. We accepted Senator Rummel's provision relating to reducing the fee for very small ponds for aquatic plant removal. On landfill siting, this was Senator Saltzman's provision and also was in the House bill, but there were some differences. We accepted some technical changes that the House had made, and we accepted a House provision that retains current law relating to prohibiting landfill siting on some sites that are not appropriate. We did not accept permitting changes that the House had passed, but we did accept a couple of good government suggestions from that bill. One that avoids duplication in state and federal environmental review, and also electronic submission of EAWs and permits. We accepted a school trust land study to look at land management and revenue from those sources, and we accepted a Coon Rapids Dam Commission that the House had proposed. The House accepted our provision putting some more money into state parks and trails from our lottery and lieu funds. Article 5 is the energy in this provision, and this includes a number of provisions. We have the House accepted Senator Rosen's provision that adjusts the assessments for the Legislative Energy Commission. We have, excuse me, the solar rebate bill, which the House and Senate provisions were quite similar between Senator Tomasoni's bill and the House bill. The changes that we accepted from the House were to adjust the funding from the dry cast storage assessment, to reduce the eligibility from 100 kilowatts to 40 kilowatts, and to require that NABCEP installers either had to install it or just approve the installation. We also have the certificate of need requirement for a power line in Minneapolis and a related study of energy options for renewable energy and energy efficiency in that area that was Senator Berglund's bill and Representative Clark's bill. On the Public Utilities Commission, we had in the Senate, we had proposed increasing staffing at the Public Utilities Commission because their staffing, they have great staffing needs and a lot more responsibilities on a continuous basis. And we did keep that in the bill, but we did change it into an appropriation. We did hear that the governor was not, I'm not supposed to mention the governor, am I? We changed it into an appropriation. Let's see. And finally, I think the last thing I want to mention about the energy section is that we agreed, the energy chairs asked us to find a home for a number of energy provisions bills, other bills that had already passed the Senate. And so we did include some other energy bills that passed the Senate, including Senate File 3051, my bill relating to conservation strategies with block rates. Senator Scogin's bill, Senate File 3126, relating to advanced determination of prudence authority for environmental improvements. Senator Pretner Solon's bill relating to separate metering for group homes. Senator Rest Bill 29, Senate File 2957, relating to a Hennepin County forward pricing mechanism. Senate File 2826, Senator Dibble's bill related to wind and solar business entity participation. My bill, Senate File 3040, that related to a St. Paul Minneapolis energy program, allowing them to add commercial industrial energy efficiency. And a similar bill that Senator Scoy had, Senate File 3124. That's all. I think that, there's just one more comment I want to make. A couple things you will not see in this bill. Number one, the House had a provision that denied 3M the authority to open a hazardous waste incinerator. We did not accept that provision in conference committee after the city...
Senator, I think it's a little noisy. This is an extremely important bill, and let's... let the author...
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm almost done. The city of Cottage Grove and 3M came to the table and told us that they were in agreement on moving forward with air monitoring equipment and other accommodations that the residents in the community really wanted to make sure that they were protecting their health in that community. So we did not accept that provision. We tried to get the House to agree to Senator Mary Olson's reorganization proposal, which would have launched an effort to carefully examine our natural resource management in a number of different state agencies and local agencies and look for new and innovative and efficient and transparent ways to deliver our natural resource management and water management to the public. We had broad bipartisan support for that provision in the Senate, but the House just wouldn't go along with it. So we'll have to do that alone as a Senate and move forward with our effort for reform. And finally, the lands bill, which was part of this bill, did not include that here, and the House had made a decision to defer that bill and pass it along with the Game and Fish bill. So that will be conferred in the Game and Fish bill. Members, that's the bill. I want to thank my conferees who did a fantastic job and worked very hard all through the weekend to get this bill done in a short period of time with a lot of contentious issues. Senator Fredrickson, Senator Rummel, Senator Chaudhry, and Senator Saxhog, and our staff who also worked tirelessly to get this bill done. I'm very, very pleased that we could take a number of quite contentious issues and put them together in a package that passed unanimously and I think has broad support outside this building as well.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. President, members, I wanted to talk just a little bit about the audit that Senator Anderson mentioned. When we started the conference committee in the House side of the conference, they had included the legislative auditor doing restoration audits, which is something the legislative auditor certainly could do, and he certainly could hire outside scientific experts to provide the expertise to do that. But when we were talking to the legislative auditor, he pointed out some drawbacks to doing that. Number one, it would greatly increase their workload, which would be to the detriment of other audits they might do. So instead, we formed the restoration evaluation panels that Senator Anderson mentioned to do those restoration evaluations to make sure that they're done in a scientific and meaningful way that'll get results. The point I wanted to add, however, is that the legislative auditor will still be doing financial audits of these funds. That has not changed at all. The legislative auditor will continue to do financial audits, and they will be charged back to the funds as they are with all state activities.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I'd like to wholeheartedly endorse this conference committee report and thank Senator Anderson for her hard work on the bill. The council, I think, thanks you for your hard work in making sure the recommendations pass. I think Minnesota sportsmen appreciate your hard work, and I think for the second year in a row, the people of Minnesota who voted for this constitutional amendment appreciate the work you've done in ensuring that the intent of their vote passed for the second year in a row. So thank you, Senator Anderson, and for all of your hard work. And I personally appreciate it, and I know certainly the conservation groups that I work with really appreciate you holding fast on the council's recommendations. You know, when it's when we're talking about all of the budget cuts that go on, I think it's really important to reflect that in times like this, economic times like this, this is exactly why Minnesotans passed this constitutional amendment, so that there would be dedicated funds to ensure that no matter what type of budget cutting activity goes on in Minnesota to balance the budget, we don't lose the things that we value most in Minnesota's cultural heritage, our outdoors, of course our arts as well, our clean water. We can never let that go, even in times of crisis, and Minnesotans voted for that. And I think this bill holds true to making sure that we preserve, protect, and enhance our prairies, our forests, our wetlands for fish, game, and wildlife. And as the fishing opener begins this coming Saturday, people begin to open up their cabins for the summer, start going camping and hiking and canoeing. I hope that they're able to look back at least on one part of the legislative session and say that their elected officials did right by them when they voted in 2008 for this amendment. Thank you to the conferees for all the hard work in this, for the repeal of the definitions, for the repeal of the legislative guide, and I think even the work on the restoration audits, which were onerous, perhaps turned into something good in the end, with the evaluation panels for all of our spending, not just picking on the council. So I think that was really good work that was done. I really appreciate everything that was done by Senator Anderson. There are also some environment policy issues that were worked on particularly for people who are boating this summer. It's very important to know that there's an important rule change that we made in law in this bill, and that is that people who are leaving the lake are required to drain all of their live wells, all of their bilges, anything that contains water except for a sanitary system or a portable bait bucket. Anything other than those two things, they need to drain after they leave the lake. That is in our effort to prevent the continuing spread of invasive species. It's not the silver bullet, it's not the be-all, end-all, but I think it will be one small step to help in a range of things that we're attempting to do. I really like the idea of the Matthew Laurie Trail. The Senate went into conference committee with changing the name of the Boundary Trail, Wisconsin Boundary Trail, to the Becky Laurie Trail, former Senator Laurie. I thought in proposing that we have a lot of things in Minnesota named after men. We need to get a few more named after women. And since this is an area where Senator Laurie served both in the Senate and the House, and because of her strong views on the environment, I felt it was appropriate. The House had a different suggestion, and I think it was a good one, really, to honor one of our fallen veterans from that area. And so I think this was really good work, and I really appreciate everyone's hard work on the issue. It was earnest, and I urge everyone to vote for it.
Senator Anderson renews her motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President.
Recommendations of the yes, Mr. Hant. Senator Hant.
Thank you, Mr. President. I had a question I wanted to ask the author of the bill. My understanding is that there were a number, I believe it is seven, bills that were added in the conference committee that were not passed by the House. And is that not an unusual thing to happen in a conference committee where you take things that have not passed one of the bodies and insert it in the conference report? I just am wondering why this was done and what was the purpose for doing it?
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Han, if it had been bills that hadn't passed the Senate, I might not have agreed to them. But that was a decision. The House was supportive of doing that. Their energy chair was supportive of doing that. And so with the support of the committees and the authors and the fact that all of the bills that I mentioned did pass the Senate already, I felt very comfortable agreeing to have them in the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I'm not aware that this happens in conference committee reports. I'm trying to think of any other instances where that has happened this year. I'm not aware of any. I believe that that is not what conference committees are charged to do, and I object to that.
Anderson renews a motion that the foregoing recommendations of the conference committee report on Senate File 3275 be now adopted, and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3275, a bill for enacting relating to state government, appropriating money from constitutionally dedicated funds, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 59 ayes and 7 nays. Bill is passed. Its title agreed.
Mr. Senator President.
Parker Miller.
I'd like to appoint a conference committee. I think we have to take a report first.
Move for a brief messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments of concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2900, a bill for an act relating to natural resources, modifying aquaculture provisions, etc. Senate File 2900 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2900 and that a conference committee of 3 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that Chaudhry motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I'd move a brief recess for the purposes of appointing conference committees.
On the motion for a brief recess, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess.
Mr. President.
I'm now order, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, there's privilege reports at the desk.
There's a privilege report at the desk.
Senator Pogemiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 2900, Senators Chaudhry, Scogin, and Ingebretson. On House File 910, Senators Betzel, Dill, and Kubli. On Senate File 3361, Senators Scheid, Betzel, and Limmer. Senator Pogemiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Anderson. Without objection, we'll revert to messages.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 2624 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 2624, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environment and natural resources. House File 2624 is herewith transmitted to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 2624 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay, Senator Anderson, a brief description of the bill and what changes were made that the Senate didn't see.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the LCCMR funding bill, which we passed with a very strong Senate vote, and we had intact the recommendations of the Citizens Legislators Commission. The House had passed an amendment, however, which removed $4.2 million worth of land acquisition projects, including state park infill projects, from the bill. So when we went to conference committee, that was the difference we had to resolve. What we did, I think, was a very good result. We tweaked some projects. The DNR stepped forward with some reductions on the state park the state park dollar amount and said that they could fill in the remainder with bonding dollars. So, and then we took some very small reductions from Habitat Partners, Habitat Conservation Partners grant, and a very small reduction from a Metro Conservation Corridors grant. And we also had some canceled money that was available from a previous project, where we ended up with about $800,000 that was available to go into state park restoration, including solar panels and water projects and restoring campgrounds, which is what the House was really interested in, to create jobs. And so we put a significant amount of money into that, but we kept all of our recommendations and projects intact. so they will all move forward. So I think it's a very, very good compromise, members, and I would urge you to support the bill.
Further discussion, Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. President, and I just want to mention that I appreciate Senator Anderson's hard work on this bill as well, but I'm not going to support it. And these are the reasons why. It's in really, Senator Anderson worked hard on reversing many of the changes that the House made, which were really draconian. But the fact of the matter is that the LCCMR, which I, Senator Anderson, Fredrickson, sit on, Senator Vickerman, works all year and takes tours throughout the summer and uses ranking process and uses long hours of debate and deliberation and peer review to come up with these recommendations. I frankly wasn't satisfied with the amount of acquisition that the LCCMR came out with. I lost that battle, but I supported it because I think that we need to support the deliberations of a very legitimate, forward-thinking body. But what happened in the House was unfortunate, and what happened out of the conference committee was a result in the reduction of acquisitions to the Habitat Corridors Partnership as well as the Metro Corridors Partnership. So there will be less. In my view, there was not enough being done, and after the compromise with the House, there's even less. So, but most importantly, I think by my green vote, I would be saying that that is somehow okay for that to happen in the future, and I just really, really object to it. I appreciate Senator Anderson's hard work. It's no reflection on what she did. I think she tried her best, but I really am getting troubled at what a few people think that they can do by fiat, because a very deliberative body didn't happen to agree with their point of view on one thing. And so I'm going to vote no. And those are my reasons why.
Further discussion. Senator Anderson renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations of Conference Committee on House File 2624 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 2624, a bill for enacting the state government, appropriating money for environment and natural resources, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Final passage. It's kind of a I waited for you. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Senator Portmiller.
Mr. President, members, I move the Senate do now resolve on motions. I move the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I think the sheet's just being passed out. There's two small education bills on there, number 33 and number 47. Senator Stumpf is the author of both. I'm not aware that there's anything overly dramatic in these bills. As a matter of fact, I think he's going to amend a couple things out. So hopefully, members, these have been on general orders for a long time, so I would yield to Senator Stumpf.
Senator Stumpf. Senator Stumpf.
Mr. President, Stumpf. I'm.
You got your motion to make. When this committee do arise, when this committee.
I move that when this committee do arise at Senate File 30.
2598.
Actually, Mr. President, I'd like to take up Senate File 3063.
First, okay.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. President.
Senator Stumpf.
That would allow Senator Olson, I believe, has an amendment to the other one. So, Mr. President and members, I do have an amendment to this bill, and it's the A-13 amendment that could be handed out.
Secretary will report the Stumpf.
Mr. President.
A-13 amendment. Senator Hand.
Point of order, Mr. President. It's very difficult to hear in the chamber.
Yeah, thank you. It's been kind of a noisy evening. So tone it down. Senator Stumpf.
Or did you report? Mr. President and members.
In fact, before that, I guess we didn't report the A-13 amendment.
Senator Stumpf moves to amend Senate File 3063 as follows, page 3, line 9. This is Amendment A-13.
Okay. Senator Stumpf on the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President and members. The Senate File 3063 was basically a package of fund transfers that the Education Committee dealt with. And what the amendment deals with is a couple items. One is that there's a provision that's in the bill that relates to the technology information education services that was we call TIES. That there's a technical amendment to that, and then the amendment takes out the alternative facilities aid reduction. And so those are the two provisions. And then it adds one more fund transfer to the bill. And that is for Aiken, the school district at Aiken, which is in Senator Saxhog's district. The fund transfers that we have are for Anoka Hennepin, which I believe was Senator Betzel's district, Elk River, and Hayfield, I believe that is Senator Senjum's district, Kenyon, Wanamingo, which is, I believe, Senator Murphy's district, and then Medelia, which is Senator Fredrickson's district, Rochester, I believe Senator Lynch, and St. Louis Park, which is Senator Latz's district. That's pretty much the contents of the bill. The amendment adds, as I mentioned earlier, Aiken, and deletes the alternative facilities aid reduction and a technical correction.
I think first of all we have to add A13 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now we're on the bill as amended. Senator Stumpf renews his motion that when this committee do rise, Senate file 3063 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favors? Senator Rosen, before the vote.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have an amendment, and we're not quite sure where it's at this point.
Senator Pogermiller, I might go to you at this point. A couple of members have said they got these late, and they're drafting a couple of amendments. I know Senator Koch and Senator Rosen, so maybe you should ought to give them a little time to maybe get those drafted.
Mr. President, why don't if Senator Stumpf would progress that bill then, and then maybe he could take up his other one.
Fine. The bill is...
Mr. President, I would progress the bill, Senate file 3063.
The bill is progressed.
Mr. President,
you're on number 33 on general orders, Senate file 2598. Want to make your motion again?
Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate file 2598 be recommended to be passed.
Okay, now you can explain this Senate bill.
Mr. President and members, last year when we passed the education bill, there is a provision in there to fund a program called the Collaborative Urban Educators. And this is a program that a number of the colleges and universities, Concordia College, St. Thomas University, Hamlin, receive some help, state assistance, to train minority teachers. And we had inadvertently forgotten to put in the division of the aid to each of these universities. And so what this does is add that clarification or that the division of that aid to those colleges and universities. And then that's the bill. And Mr. President, I do have an amendment to that bill as well, and that's the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the Stumpf A1 amendment.
Senator Stumpf moves to amend Senate file 2598 as follows. Page 1 after line 5, insert. This is amendment A-1.
Senator Stumpf on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. In committee, we had heard a proposal that we discussed regarding the Metro School for the Deaf. And the Metro School for the Deaf is a charter school. And because of the unallotment last summer, the cash flow for that school was severely restricted. And I would yield to Senator Saltzman, whose district I believe the Metro School for the Deaf is in, to explain exactly what has been worked out. We tried to work it out with the Department of Education tried to work out a way to keep the Metro School for the Deaf going, but were unable to make that program or change available. And so this is language that I think had universal agreement from the department and everyone. And Senator Saltzman.
Senator Saltzman.
And on this provision, Mr. President, I know a number of you have been contacted by constituents in your district. The Metro School for the Deaf, the North Star Academy, actually merged this last year, and they serve 100 young people who are deaf or hearing impaired. And if you can imagine these children, when they are maybe the only child in their district who is hearing impaired and deaf, to be part of a school community where they all can communicate together and have their needs met, they have excellent teachers who can accommodate them. The testimony from these young people was really compelling. And yet this school is really at danger of being closed because 100% of their students are on special education funding because they can't keep a fund balance, because they're a charter school, they don't have levy authority. They really are in a situation now because of the unallotment that they could close, that they won't be able to pay their bills. And so we've worked with the department, we've worked with them with an arrangement here where they will be able.
Senator Hand, for what?
Mr. President, I'm just looking at this amendment, and I'm wondering whether it would be more germane to the other education bill. This has to do with a finance provision, and I think the underlying bill, the 2598, I'm not certain that it has the same purpose.
I haven't read the bill. I would, not speaking for Senator Saltzman, but I guess she would
Mr. President,
see it passed on whichever bill she could get it on. Senator Stump?
Mr. President, I think Senate File 2598, the bill that we're working on, relates to appropriations, whereas the other bill relates to levies. And so the
Now that does have the connection. Senator Saltzman, thanks for the clarification.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. And so this bill, what it will do is that it will allow the school to submit to the Department of Education to ask that their payments be accelerated to a 90-10. And this has a precedent in that this is what schools in statutory operating debt are able to do as well. So this is something that we think is very important to pass. This is a school that, as many of you have heard from, serves a very specific group of young people. And their existence really depends on us right now coming up with a fix for them. So we would appreciate your support of this amendment on the bill.
Hey, we're on the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on
Mr. President?
Mr. Chairman, but yes, Senator Stump?
Mr. President, and I would, I believe Senator Olson had an amendment, and if that amendment isn't ready, I could progress the bill.
Olson, do you know if
you
it's...
Do you have an Olson yet?
You don't have it. We don't have it at the desk.
Mr. Chair, they're just changing the bill number to which it's applied, and that started the process a few minutes ago, but it isn't. I don't have it at my desk yet.
Okay.
Mr. President, I had progress Senate File 2598.
Okay, Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. Chairman, while we're waiting for those amendments to be drafted, we'll go back on to the regular order of business and take up the explanation on Senate File 2614. So I move the committee do now rise and report.
Okay. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr.
Do I need to adopt the committee report?
There isn't one. I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
Aye. No, these amendments.
Okay, yeah. On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President. Members, the House is working on the conference committee report to House File 2614. We will be taking that up when the House processes it. As I understand it, the bill 930 is the 12 hours for us also. So I would yield to Senator Berglund for the description.
Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator Fischbach, do you?
Mr. President, I just wanted to raise a point. Section 100 of Mason's Manual says that unless we have a motion in front of the body, we're not to debate and discuss that.
I think procedurally we have Senator Pogemiller. You should, Senator Pogemiller. Senator Fischbach is questioning if we don't have a motion in front of us. What number was that? Number section 100 of Mason's.
Mr. President, it is section 100, chapter 11. It's on page 82 of the newest version of Mason's Manual, the 2000 version.
The only thing I could say to this is that we've done this very often. I mean, where we've started the debate, so we don't, you know, have to wait till we can't move on anything, obviously. But we have done this many times to get things started. So, unless you want to pursue Senator Pogemiller, do you have?
Mr. President, I was going to make that comment. It's been kind of custom and tradition in the Senate to expedite matters in this manner. And it's obviously with the consent of the body. So if the body wants to start the explanation, I would hope we would do that. If the body chooses not to start the explanation, we can do that also.
That's the term I was looking for, too, custom and usage. We've done this. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, traditionally, if no one does make an objection, then there's an assumption of a suspension of the rules. But given that I am making an objection at this point, if you'd like to take a look, like I said,
I believe 100. You. I just say that so I suppose it's up to the body. What do you want to?
President.
I mean, we could sit here till. Yeah, that's fine. But I'm just saying we've done this many times, but if you don't want to do it.
Mr. President, I don't know that there is a rule of the body. You're referring to Mason's Manual. What I don't want to do is set up some kind of precedent here, but it's my sense that the body would like this to be explained right now.
Mr. President? Mr. President, I don't want to set up a precedent that we will take up. Now, I understand this is a conference committee report, so there is no ability to amend it. But in the past, we have taken up bills, and we were to offer amendments when we were discussing it when there was no motion in front of us. So what I don't want to do is set a precedent that this is going to be, I know, and I understand we have done it in the past. But I don't think we should do it into the future. And I just want to make that objection on the record that this is a concern that we just kind of throw the rules out the door. And I am making an objection at this point.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I don't believe there is a rule to object to, but I'm absolutely willing to wait. And when the body feels it's time to act, I will call the body to order. And if I need a suspension, I'm guessing we'll get it. So I move. I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for purposes of taking up the General Orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
What do you want to take the bills up?
President, we're trying to extend a courtesy to Senator Olson and Senator Rosen,
yeah.
And I am willing to wait a few minutes for that. And so I guess we'll just wait a few minutes, if that's okay with the President. Would a recess be in order? Or
I'm told it's only a minute or so, if you want
okay,
to.
Okay, well, we'll just wait then.
Sit still and...
Mr. President,
Senator Pogorzelski.
Mr. President, I believe Senator Rosen is ready with her amendment now. So I'm not sure which bill is that. 3063, Senator Stumpf.
I think it's on Senate File 3063. Secretary will report. He's got to make his motion again. Stumpf.
Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3063 be recommended to be passed.
Okay, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the Rosen A50 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate File 3063 as follows. Page 3 after line 27, insert. This is Amendment A50.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This amendment deals with United South Central Independent School District 2134 and the Alternative Facilities Bonding Authority. And this bill was heard in Senator Stumpf's committee. And it talks about the bonding authority that has been giving to the larger school districts throughout the state that have created clearly a winners and losers type of setup. And so this is a school district that has been to this Capitol and been to committee hearings many, many years. And it is a school district that has extenuating circumstances when it comes to their facility. And it is a clearly an issue that needs to be dealt with because that facility is crumbling underneath them. And under current law, the Alternative Facilities Program allows but does not mandate large districts with older buildings to levy and or bond for deferred maintenance, repairs, and accessibility improvements. The program is open to smaller districts only for specific health and safety projects that exceed $500,000. The criteria for approval of such projects is strict, so this is limited. There's limited use of by smaller districts. Also of limited use to smaller districts is the Deferred Maintenance Revenue Program, which only provides $60 per student each year. So this amendment would allow just one more school district to be under the Alternative Facilities Bonding Authority, or program, levy authority. And as you can see by the current bill, the Senate File 3063, another school district was allowed into this program, and that was Wayzata. So again, you have, this will be make 24 school districts that are eligible for this levy authority, only three outstate, Duluth, Rochester, and St. Cloud. So clearly, members, I believe it's a vote of fairness, and we can hopefully start to help some of these small school districts that struggle with the same issues as these other larger school districts are struggling with. So I ask for your support.
Question on the A50 Rosen amendment.
Senator Stumpf. Mr. President, I in looking over this, and I believe that this was a proposal that was in the committee last year. anyway, I think it does have a levy cost, but I do understand the situation there, and it would be a district that could use it. So I would support that amendment.
Okay, we're on to Rosen 850 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Hand, we're waiting for the Senator Koch. I believe she's...
Mr. President, I have the A51 amendment. I think it is listed under Senator Koch's name, but...
Oh, okay, whatever. Senator, the Secretary will report the A51 Hand amendment.
Senator Hahn moves to amend Senate File 3063 as follows. Page 1 after line 9, insert. This is Amendment A51.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the A51 amendment, this is an amendment that you have seen before. We had an attempt to amend this language onto a tax bill a few days ago. This is the codification, putting into statute the shift language that this body adopted as part of the tax bill last spring, and it also is the language that would put in place, make permanent the simulated shift, if you will, that the governor's unallotment process provided for.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. President, I question the germaneness of this.
Senator Stumpf, do you have one or two reasons why?
Mr. President, it's a substantial change from the scope of the existing bill, which was basically a fund transfer bill for schools. And I think with the proposal that Senator Hand is offering, it moves it into a whole different realm of things that are just not relevant to the fund transfers.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
I'm looking at the title of the bill, the underlying bill 3063 relating to education finance, which my amendment certainly does. It also deals with levies, and that's what this bill also deals with, levies. I think that it is the same subject, has to do with education. Furthermore, Mr. President, I think there are many members of this body that would like to see this body vote on this provision. And there's a certain amount of frustration that we've seen over the last several days as this provision that we've all been interested in has not been seeing the light of day. And I think this is a perfectly germane amendment to a education finance bill.
Senator Hand, I'll remind you that this really doesn't.
Mr. Chair,
your mention about what this body would like and what it wouldn't like, I don't think that has anything to do with the germaneness. But Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, a non-germane amendment is one that relates to a substantially different subject, and I am no expert on education finance. I leave that to Senator Stumpf and Senator Hand, Senator Bonhoff, and others in this chamber. But for me, this is pretty straightforward. Education finance, school funding in the bill. Education finance, school funding in the amendment. That seems to be the same purpose, same subject. It may accomplish different things. Not exactly the same, but that's the whole purpose of an amendment, is to consider what else should be in the bill, or what nuances should we adopt, or should we actually look at a provision a little differently. That's what we do when we offer an amendment. So I hope to be fair to Senator Hahn and others interested in this amendment. I hope you'll rule that this amendment is in fact germane, and let's get on with the debate.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, Senate Rule 35.2 says a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different purpose or is included to accomplish a substantial subject or is included to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill to which has been proposed. The purpose of the bill is to permit fund transfers for certain school districts. That is the purpose of the bill. If the amendment fails on either test, if it's a substantially different subject or if it's a substantially different purpose, it is not germane. This clearly is a substantially different purpose than the underlying bill because the amendment has nothing to do with fund transfers for certain school districts.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just argue also that if you look in Sections 4, which has to do with alternative facilities aid reduction, and not necessarily specific schools fund transfer, it references Minnesota Statute Section 123B.59, sub 6 and 7. In Section 5, it references Minnesota State Statute Section 123B.79, 123B.80, and this Senator Hand's amendment goes to Section 123B.75. So I don't think that we are out of line asking to vote on this amendment. I think it's very much in line with the levy discussion that we're having right now, as well as in general education finance.
I believe that this amendment is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose. We're dealing with the bill deals with levy transfers and fund transfers, and we're talking about a substantial shifts in the amendment. So I would rule that it goes too far, and it's too big of a stretch, and it is not germane.
Mr. President, with respect, I would challenge the ruling of the chair, and I'd like a roll call vote, and I would just encourage members to dispute your ruling if they wish to have a vote on this subject this year.
Obviously, it's the ruling we're voting on. Just keep that in mind. It's some people might like the issue, and some might not. But it's the ruling. I just want to make that clear to the body what you're voting on. Our green vote sustains the ruling of the chairman. Secretary, I'll take the roll. All senators having voted. There to vote. Secretary. Close the roll. There being 43 ayes and 22 nays, 42 ayes and 22 nays, the ruling of the chair is sustained. Further discussion. Senator Stumpf renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate file. Is this the 30? 3063 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Senator. Mr. President.
Gotta renew your motion on Senate File 2598.
Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2598 be recommended to be passed.
Okay, Senator Stumpf. I think you already went through the bill, didn't you?
Okay.
Do you have
Mr. President, I yield to Senator Olson.
Senator G. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the G. Olson A50 amendment.
Senator Olson G. moves to amend Senate File 2598 as follows. Page 1 after line 5, insert. This is Amendment A50.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, the provisions in this amendment passed the Senate last year in this same form. It didn't survive a conference committee, but they accomplished several purposes in terms of lifting some of the reporting requirements on homeschool families, which also relieves the superintendents and administrators and other entities that are affected by these reports from some workload. And in exchange for that, also, the homeschool families have given up their access to the state textbook aid. And that it will now be available to schools that have at least 15 students. That is the mechanism in here that changes that. Homeschool families would bring requests for several children, all kinds of books. There was a lot of requirements of the school to order these books, and they became in their possession. So this is a relief to the school district. It adds some over $400,000 a year to the general fund. And so I think that it is a very valuable thing. It's been signed off. It's agreed to by the superintendents at Minnesota, the motor vehicle services, and I believe the county attorneys are okay because it affects different levels of reporting. It does relieve none of the record keeping that the families have to provide that are and the reports that are needed as to significant time times that they are important to have on record. So it lightens the load all the way around, and I think it's a win-win, and I hope that you will support it once again and put it on this bill.
Senator Stump.
Mr. President, as Senator Olson mentioned this last year, that this was supported part of our education bill, and when we're looking for extra dollars at the bottom of the general fund, this helps out by $400,000 a year. And also it reduces mandates on the school districts, which I think all of them would appreciate. So I would support this amendment.
We're on the A50G Olson amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion on Senate File 2598 as amended? Senator Stump renews his motion that when this committee to arise, Senate File 2598 is amended to be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the secretary, be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, members, the House is processing the conference committee report on House File 2614. The deadline for 12-hour rule for the Senate has passed. It is in order. The custom and tradition of the Senate to expedite business is to discuss bills that we know are coming over. I think it would be wise for the members to discuss it now. If the choice of the body is not to discuss it now, then when the report does come from the House, we will take the conference committee up and we will vote on it. I would hope members would take the opportunity now to discuss it. So I would yield to Senator Berglund.
Mr. President.
Senator Fischbach, do you?
Mr. President, I do believe that this body has that rule. And I and custom and use, custom and tradition, I understand that in the past it has been allowed. I think allowed by the entire body because there was no objection. But there is a clear rule in Masons that we do not have discussions until we have a motion before us. I will reluctantly withdraw my objection so that we can go ahead and discuss this conference committee before we have it in front of us, but I do want to be on record explaining that this is not traditionally what we do, or traditionally what we should be doing, because we should be following the rules. The rules are in place to allow ample opportunity to discuss, to do things, the proper procedure, and I will repeat that I reluctantly withdraw that objection, but I do want to go on record that I have objected to this and that in the future we will continue to if this practice becomes regular.
Senator, your points are well taken and well made. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, members, there are some small changes in the bill that left the Senate in regard to the Health and Human Services budget reduction bill. There was one additional small grant cut in the mental health area. It was a one-time grant, and the grant has not been awarded yet in the amount of $300,000. There was a change to the cut in CD rates. The Senate had only providers above the median being cut by 5%. This bill will cut those below the median by a little less than 2%, but the cut to those below the median is a one-time cut. There is a provision that we accepted from the House that will cut medical specialty care providers by $5.8 million this biennium and $31.8 million in the next biennium. There's a small grant to increase funding for the food shelves. We were able to claim more certified public expenditures for DISH in the Minnesota Care Program by carving out the hospital portion of the payments for inpatient hospitalization in the next biennium and having that be paid for on a fee-for-service basis. The Minnesota Food Assistance Program is scheduled to have a deficiency next year, and we were able to fund that $150,000 deficiency in this bill. And we did so by taking some projected excess revenue out of the Adoption Assistance and Relative Custody Program. Region 10 Quality Assurance Program is funded one time with $100,000. There were three facilities for our developmentally disabled citizens that were given a one-time rate increase. They are an ICFMR in Atwater, an ICFMR in Clearwater, and a DAC in Monoman County. We did accept a provision in the House bill that reduced TEFRA contributions from the state for parents and families above 556% of poverty. We did include in this bill the funding for the PACE bill that had passed as a separate item on the floor of the Senate. There is a small study about the transfer of fiscal note duties in the bill. We did accept a House provision that will reduce Medicaid rates to the Medicare payment for non-mental health and non-primary care providers. This is a reduction to some specialists and a reduction to nurse midwives, but not to the rates that they would be paid in a birthing center. There was a bill that allowed volunteer firefighters to come into Minnesota Care without a subsidy to their premium, and we're carrying the programming costs in this bill. We did accept a House proposal to modify coverage for rehab services. These are services that were requested to be eliminated in their payment by the governor. The House limited the number of services you can get without prior authorization, and we did accept that, except we did not accept it for chiropractors. In the tails, there is an inpatient hospital ratable reduction of 1.96%. That was not in the bill when it left the Senate. There was an exemption from the withhold for improved performance on emergency room visits. There was an exemption for county-based purchasing to be subject to that withhold. When the bill left the Senate, we had asked that the Department of Human Services stop paying for services in our corrections programs. In this bill, the interagency contract will continue, and the Department of Corrections will pay half of the cost, and the Department of Human Services will pay half of the cost. In the state-operated services redesign area, we did add some funding for the Wilmer state-operated services program. Otherwise, those provisions are identical to what left the Senate. There is a $1.5 million additional cut in fiscal year 11 for the Department of Human Services. They already took their original governor's cuts in the GMC bill, so this is above what the governor proposed. We did eliminate a lead-based grant from the Department of Health. It's a very small grant. There was $198,000 provided for another healthcare transformation task force. We did transfer more money from the health board's special revenue account reserves than the Senate had when it left the floor. We corrected an appropriation error to the Emergency Medical Services Board, but not in the total amount that they requested. We funded it at about half of what they requested. And we did continue an appropriation for a medical response unit reimbursement pilot program. And so, Mr. Chairman, that does conclude a summary of the differences in the bill when it left the floor of the Senate and the bill coming back from conference committee, and I'd be ready to answer any questions.
If you'll hold on for a minute, we've got the bill at the desk. We're preparing the motion right now. Without objection, we'll revert to third order of business, messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2614 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 2614, a bill for an act relating to state government, state health care programs, continuing care, etc., House File 2614 is herewith transmitted to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Berglund.
I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 2614 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Senator Berglund, you've already given a description of the bill. So are there any questions about or discussion on the bill? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Berglund yield?
She will yield.
Senator Berglund, I see that we are covering some more people at a little more cost with the early option. And I am wondering, however, compared to the GAMC provision that we passed earlier this session, which did include some reform in it, is there any reform with the early option spending for adults? Is there going to be any limitation on the type of services they can receive, or will it continue to be just spend as normal?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and members, I would call your attention to this handout I have given you. The early enrollment into Medicaid is not just for people who would be in the GMC program. It also covers people that would be in the Minnesota Care program, and it covers some people that are under $8,000 a year in income that would not be in either program. And it does so with a spending of only $188 million increase over a three-year period. And with that increase in spending, we capture $1.4 billion in federal funding. So we get back $7.45 for every dollar we spend on the early enrollment option. And Senator Roebling, there are reforms in this bill. There's a lot of reform in this bill. There is one project for Hennepin Medical Center and Ramsey County Regents Hospital to do total cost of care management for all public clients, not just GAMC clients, in contract with the department. And through that mechanism, we expect to get additional IGT, intergovernmental transfer, from those hospitals to help us balance our budget. And that is a fairly large tail savings of about $26 million for the budget. In addition to that, other hospitals and other care providers are authorized under the bill to enter into negotiations with the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Human Services can apply to the federal government for them to be accountable care organizations that would include Medicare spending as well as Medicaid spending, and perhaps even Minnesota Care clients would be involved in that kind of a payment reform proposal. In addition to that, there is language in the bill that would encourage other types of funding to come to the state for the study of health insurance exchange, for possible public health funding that could replace the funding that we no longer have appropriated for the SHIP program next biennium. So there's quite a bit of reform in the bill, and the reform in the bill is better than the GAMC reform because it covers a larger group of clients. And by covering a larger group of clients, it makes it more feasible for healthcare providers to actually make changes in the way they deliver care to patients.
Further discussion, Senator Hand.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, I'm sorry. The author of the bill is describing the option, I guess, that we are exercising to enroll in the federal program early. And I'm just curious to know if the author of the bill believes that what the federal government is doing with respect to health care is appropriate. Is it appropriate for us as a state to turn over a significant portion of issues that have, at least as I understand the Constitution, been the province of states, the federal government, She just mentioned a moment ago about how this is a reform because it increases the number of clients that are going to be served. In other words, that the federal government program is going to make a larger group of citizens clients of the federal government. And it seems to me that that is a dangerous path for us to go down, to turn over more and more responsibility for things that have been done by states, the federal government, because we all know that once we start doing this and start taking the money, there comes with that more and more direction from the federal government of what we should do. We've seen this in education. We've seen it in transportation. We've already seen it to this point in some of the things that have to do with health care. And it seems to me that we are now going to go down that path even further. And I'm troubled by this, particularly since this is something that we do not have to do. And I'm just wondering if this is what the direction that the chairman of the committee and the author of the bill believes that the state of Minnesota ought to go down the path of turning over the responsibility for health care in this country to the federal government.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator, and I think I view it a lot differently than you do. I view this as an opportunity to spend a dollar and get $7.45 back from the federal government to help make sure we don't have as much uncompensated care in our communities, and thereby bringing down the charges that hospitals have to pass on to all the rest of us that have regular insurance. I also view this as an opportunity in the future for us to help more people get into a private insurance system and not necessarily have to rely on state government programs for affordable health care coverage.
Senator Hahn.
Well, Mr. President and members, the author of the bill has pointed out that we have a disagreement. I think that that is true. I don't know that the idea that the federal government is going to be spending more money than we can spend right now is a good enough reason for us to do this. And it doesn't, in my opinion, represent reform if we say, well, the federal government is going to spend some more money so that we don't have to spend that money. That doesn't necessarily mean anything has gotten better. It just means that we have taken an obligation that we've assumed as a state, and we're now going to say, well, the federal government is going to do that. And as I said, I think that that also will entail, if not today, then tomorrow, additional rules about how we are to do this and to what extent we need to do this, and turning over, again, a significant part of what we as citizens of a state have agreed to do and saying now it's going to be the province of the federal government to do this. I think that there is an issue beyond just the money here that needs to be addressed. I don't know that, and I don't believe, I haven't read the bill yet, the federal bill. I don't know if anybody in this body has read the federal bill, but I don't believe from what I know of it that the federal bill does anything to enhance private ownership of health insurance. That doesn't seem to be the direction that the federal government has been taking. And so if our goal is to get citizens into a situation where they're taking responsibility for their own health care and taking responsibility for their own insurance, I don't know that the federal government's suggestion is going to facilitate that. And certainly taking the approach of saying, well, we're going to do some things at the state level, but no, we're not going to do them. We're going to just turn them over to the federal government so they can do more of it to more people. That, to me, isn't reform. It doesn't make it clear to me that we are actually doing things to enhance responsibility. So I have great concern about this because I don't believe that it is the appropriate thing. I don't know that there is a constitutional warrant under the federal constitution for the federal government to do this in the first place. And that issue has been brought up and challenged. I think as a state, we are remiss in effect saying we agree with the federal government by taking their money and taking their program now. I believe we ought to wait. I don't even know if we're going to have the money that the federal government says it's going to spend. As I understand it, they're broke. Where is this money going to come from? Is it going to come from borrowing? Is it going to come from inflation? Is it going to come from massive tax increases at the federal level? They don't have a pile of money sitting in Washington, D.C. waiting to be spent. And they're telling us that they're going to spend a whole lot money, more money than we are, but it's not clear to me they even have that money. Members, this is not a good idea for us to do this, particularly now. If we are going to contemplate doing this, we ought to at least wait until it becomes more clear what it is we're signing up for. And I'd encourage you to vote no.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and members, the federal government has every right to give us the opportunity to enroll more low-income people in the Medicaid program. And that's all this bill is doing. It is looking to take opportunities to get the federal government engaged with us in payment reform, something we've been working toward doing since 2008. And certainly there's nothing wrong with that. We've had a place at our table for the federal government to join us in payment reform for a long time, and I'm glad they're ready to come to the table and join us now. And members, there is nothing wrong with paying for this early enrollment in this bill. It is paid for. It is paid for this year, next year, and the year after that. And in 2014, the federal government takes over 100% of the cost of what we're paying a small amount for in this bill. And so we don't need to worry about in the future we aren't going to be able to afford this, because the bill for this is paid for over the next 3 years, and at the end of that time, the state obligation ceases. So we really don't have very much to lose by doing this. What do we have to lose by not doing this? About 21,000 more jobs in the state of Minnesota. Over $1.1 billion in more economic activity generated in the state of Minnesota. Less uncompensated care for hospitals and other providers. At this point in time in the economy of the state of Minnesota, this is exactly what the doctor ordered.
Further discussion, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'd like to also ask the author of the bill about the change that this conference committee report represents with respect to the compromise agreement on the general assistance medical care program that we dealt with earlier this year. That was a program that we went through a couple of iterations on. We ended up with a bill that was quite different in its structure than what we had seen before, and many of us thought it represented real reform in that it put a limit on the dollar amount that hospitals would get, and as a way of encouraging hospitals and other providers to find better ways to treat people rather than just passing the cost on to the state. And I guess I'm a little concerned that we had that agreement in place, and it seemed to be there were some issues with it, but it seemed to be okay until the federal government came along and said, well, we've got this new approach. And that's when it seemed to me that things began to break down. And now we've got a conference committee report that's saying, well, we're going to invalidate that law that we passed earlier this year that the governor signed off on. We're going to invalidate that and turn this over to another program. And I'm just wondering if the author would comment on why we would go through that process of what we did do and then throw it out. There's nothing, as I understand it, in the current bill that has a similar structure in place that would put some kind of structure to encourage a new model of treatment to be developed by providers. What is in the bill that would mimic that reform that was in the GAMC compromise bill that we passed?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and members, right before the GAMC bill passed the floor of the House, some of the folks in the House and Senate that worked on it went over to visit with the governor, because it did look at that point in time like perhaps there would be a health care reform bill. And we had known all along if there was a health care reform bill, the option to enroll people without children into Medicaid early would possibly be in that legislation. And the governor said he thought we should go ahead and pass the GAMC reform bill, because otherwise, on April 1st, there would be people without any coverage, and this was true. He also said he would consider signing a bill that would have Minnesota do the early enrollment. If we paid for it, if we balanced the health care access fund, if we met our obligations for this area of the budget in balancing the budget, and if we provided the next biennium tail savings to take away some of the next biennium's problems. And we've done all of those things in this bill. I actually think maybe that was the line the governor drew in the sand because he thought we couldn't meet the challenge, but we have done that in this bill. And so I believe that we have a responsible bill here. This is not a government takeover. This is a government hand to help us in covering people that otherwise would not be insured in Minnesota who are very low income and will not be in a position to purchase their own insurance. There is reform. Accountable care organizations are organizations that will be paid in a new way on a total cost of care for the patients that they are signing contracts with us, and that will include the former general assistance medical care population, some of the Minnesota care population, and the Medicaid population. And it could go beyond that to the rest of the Minnesota care population as well. And when they enter into these contracts, what they will be doing is they will be sharing the savings they get by providing care in a different way with the state. So it would be a cost-sharing, a cost-gaining program. If the providers save money, they'll get to keep part of it, and the state will get to keep part of it. So there is reform in this bill in terms of changing the way care is provided, especially to our chronically ill patients.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I would like to ask the author of the bill, she mentioned just a moment ago in her comments that the GAMC reform bill had been something that was worked out with people from the House and the Senate and the governor's office. There was an agreement made, and that bill was passed and adopted and put into law. Has this bill also had that same level of agreement? Has the governor's office indicated that they accept this as a reform, as it's been described? Have they accepted this? Are they going to sign this bill? Or is this something that we're going to have to do over again tomorrow?
Further discussion. So further discussion. Seeing now, Senator Berglund renews. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. I thought perhaps Senator Berglund would respond to that, so I was waiting. Would Senator Berglund yield?
She will yield.
Senator Berglund, I'm trying to pull out some numbers. Numbers get really important the last couple of days here. Now, the number I hear sort of on the street is that this thing saves us $114 million for this particular biennium. Is that correct?
Senator Berglund.
So, Senator Senjum, if you'll look on line 3 where it says general fund, and you go over and you look under the column marked fiscal year 10 and 11, you'll see $114 million, and that's what the savings are that we're contributing to this biennium's budget deficit.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Berglund, and if we continue on line 3, as we look then to 12-13, are we talking $155,000, is that correct?
No, that's million.
Right, $155 million. So we would see, at least as we those here next year would put that budget together, this would suggest we're going to save $155 million.
Senator Berglund.
Is that correct?
Well, Mr. President and Senator Senjum, that's what's in this bill. There were other savings that were in the earlier GMC bill.
Okay.
And there are other savings from our budget that were in the bill that was passed earlier this week by Senator Cohen.
Senator Senjum.
And again, thank you, and thank you, Senator Berglund. I'm looking now at this other sheet you handed out. And frankly, Senator Berglund, I'm just trying to understand. This additional state spending, are we going to spend, Senator Berglund, $188 million? Is this over 3 years to capture that 1.4? Is that Is that the plan?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator Sinchem, that's right. $188 million more than we otherwise would be spending on the same people, and we get $1.4 million back from the federal government to help us with it. And so we're getting $7.45 back for every dollar we're investing. And I can just bet your bottom dollar you'd be the first one to author the bill if this was money for higher education or K-12 education or for police and fire protection in the state of Minnesota. This is a good deal, Senator Sinchem.
Senator Sinchem. Mr. President, Senator Berglund, I'm just trying to understand it. So we will be spending $188 million, but we'll be saving $114 million. Or pardon me, we'll probably be saving, is that 130 or 88 million, Senator Berglund? Is that, you divide that by three?
Senator Berglund.
Over 3 years?
Mr. President, Senator Sinchem, when you make an expenditure over 3 years, yes, you divide it by three.
Okay.
And we get $1.4 billion. That's with a B, not million.
Senator Sinchem.
Senator Berglund, you're used to working with rather large numbers. So we will be spending at least 60-some million dollars a year, but we will capture $1.4 billion, but we will save $114 million. Now, Senator Berger, I'm not sure you can, I'm sure you could, given enough time. I'm just trying to understand how the money flows here, and I don't know if you can give, I may be the only one in the group that doesn't understand, but could you maybe in a sentence or two just tell us how the money flows?
Mr. President?
It would be helpful, I think.
Yes, Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator Sinchem, the $188 million is paid for by making other cuts to free up that money. And when we send that money off to the federal government, then they send us the $188 million back, and they also send back with it the $1.4 billion. And we distribute that to providers across the state, including the Mayo Clinic, to help take care of the folks in our communities that are under $8,000 a year income.
Senator Olson M.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just didn't want to let this opportunity go by without saying how much I deeply appreciate the work that Senator Berglund has done, as well as other conference committee members, but particularly with her leadership, to really do an amazing job of taking what seemed like an insolvable problem at the beginning of session and not only providing care for people who were otherwise going to go without care, particularly in rural Minnesota, because the situation as it stands right now with regard to everyone who was in GAMC in rural Minnesota is that they're not going to have any access to care unless it's in an emergency room where it's the most expensive. And if they utilize that care there, the rest of us are all going to be paying for it, and that's going to be uncompensated care for our hospital to have to deal with. Instead, they're going to have a solution that not only provides coverage, but it provides better coverage than was available before, broader coverage, and at a higher reimbursement rate. In addition to that, because of some formula changes that Senator Berglund has found that we can access as are other states, we're going to have a total of $5 million more to pay for care in a relatively small regional hospital in my area. And so, unlike what's been happening recently in that hospital, where jobs have been lost, nurses and physicians in our area have lost their jobs and people have lost access to certain kinds of care that would have been available before, we're going to be able to add jobs and provide care and keep health care costs down for people in our community overall because we won't have to make up for those uncompensated care costs. When I talked to my hospital administrator about this a week or so ago and told him what Senator Berglund had been able to put together in her bill, he said, "This is the first piece of good news I've heard in a long time." And so I think we need to look really carefully at what this bill does for our communities and for the state of Minnesota before we look at I really think it's important, and I hope everyone will really analyze and study the details of what's in this bill and what it actually means to your community, because we're hearing from the healthcare professionals across the state. They're asking us to do this. We're hearing from people who will be covered across the state, and we're even hearing from our business communities across the state because they understand the impact and the benefits of this bill to our state compared to what will happen if we don't adopt this. Thank you.
Sarah Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to talk a little bit about how the money flows in this bill. And the money that's available means that we do not have any direct cuts to nursing homes. The money that flows means that our hospitals and clinics are going to be compensated at substantially higher rates. How the money flows means that our hospitals and clinics are going to see a reduction and their uncompensated care. The Mayo Clinic has suggested that this early enrollment provision is of the utmost importance. It is a critical item for healthcare reform. This is a brilliant piece of work. There are 11 states that have the opportunity for early enrollment. And frankly, we fought long and hard with our congressional delegation to ensure that Minnesota was one of those 11 states. This is a fabulous opportunity.
Their hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And members, I think we need to get as clear as we can. This is a complicated issue. We understand that. There's a lot of money here. There's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts. But the thing that I think we need to focus on with this is that there is nothing, as I understand the bill, and I've been trying to sort through this, that is going to get at the things that drive the costs in healthcare. There is no reform of the process. All we're doing is expanding coverage and finding ways to pay for it. That's all we're doing. We're expanding coverage, and we're saying the federal government is going to come in and give us, you know, $1.5 billion to pay for that. And we're going to do some other things to expand eligibility and broaden coverage for other people. But as I understand it, that, and maybe the author of the bill can talk about this, but we are spending $250 million, and we're going to raise $377 million in new revenue in some way, in the form of taxes, fees, maybe not taxes, but fees, surcharges, transfers. And so what we're doing, members, is there's nothing magic here. No cost is going away. No cost is being reduced. All we're saying is that somebody else is going to pay for it. And it seems like a large portion of this someone else is going to be the federal government. Well, who's the federal government? Well, it's the taxpayers of our state and taxpayers of other states who are spending our tax money, and it's going to Washington, D.C., and now they're going to give us some of it back, which is something I think is unconstitutional. And they're going to give some of it back and say, well, we'll pay for some of this cost as long as you broaden your costs. As long as you make it more expensive, we'll give you some money back. There's nothing magic in here. There's nothing in this bill that is getting at the real drivers of healthcare costs. And I think this is something we ought to pay attention to. This is all about how we're going to pay for things. And I guess I'd like to ask the author of the bill if she could describe some of the things that are going on in here. Where are the fees being raised? Where are the surcharges being added? Where is the revenue coming from, other than the federal government, that is financing the spending in this bill? Could you please talk about that?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, members, the surcharges in this bill are not paying for the early enrollment. They're helping us balance our budget. So the things that are in the bill that are paying for the early enrollment are a 3% rate cut to HMOs, a 10% reduction in payments for people without children in Minnesota care that are above 75% of poverty, and there are rate cuts to other providers in the bill as well. Now, when that money is cut and we take it and we send it to Washington to do this early enrollment, they match that money and then they send it back to us, and we get more back than we actually sent in. And so then we turn around and give the money back to the health plans and to the doctors. And so in the end, people really come out better off than they would otherwise be. So yes, we're cutting. We're cutting in order to be able to afford this. But in the end, everyone is better off because we are going to be enrolling people in a federal program that gets a 50% match.
Sir Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, and as I understand the explanation, what we're going to do is we're going to raise some fees and charges to HMOs and hospitals and providers, and the idea is that we're going to cut their reimbursements at the state level, and then we're going to take that money and we're going to send it off to Washington, where then they're going to magically send it back to us at 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 times the rate, and magically we're going to get this money back from the federal government that is going to pay for these things. But again, nothing has changed in the idea of what is happening at the patient-doctor level. There's nothing changed in the processes. There's nothing changed in the procedures. There's nothing in this bill that is going to change the dynamic of where the costs come from. In fact, we're doing things that will likely encourage more cost over time because we're going to tell people it's free. We're going to tell people it doesn't cost anything. We're going to tell people the federal government is paying for it. And when you do those things, that encourages people to do things that they might not do if they were paying for it themselves. So the likelihood is that this is going to drive costs even higher. But there's nothing in the bill that is getting at the real cost drivers in healthcare. This is just about how we're going to pay a larger bill. And we somehow got this idea that the federal government can magically do it. Again, something that is unconstitutional, in my opinion, and I would submit, read your Constitution if you disagree, and show me where you find the federal warrant to do health care at the state level or any level for that matter. But that's what we're doing. This is about who's going to pay for it, and we're deciding that we want to pay more costs for more people, but because we have a budget problem, we're going to get the federal government to do it. Oh, they have a budget problem too, I guess, but they're in the unique position as they don't have to balance their budget. They can deficit spend. They can tax future generations, our children and grandchildren, forever. They can borrow from China. They can print money in the basement of the Capitol. And that's what they're doing. There is not a pile of money in Washington that has not been spent that's going to finance this bill this year, next year, or into the future. And we talk about how I've heard people in this body talk about the person in the executive office down in the corner and how he's using gimmicks and he's using things that aren't real to balance the budget. Well, what are we doing here? Does anybody believe the federal government's got a whole bunch of money that they don't need to spend in someplace else? We all know the federal government doesn't have any money, but we're counting on them to finance this now and forever into the future at a much higher cost rate than what we're doing today. And somehow that's magically going to work out. Members, I think this is a faulty idea. We do not have to do it. We do not have to do it today, and we should vote no.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Berglund renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 2614 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Secretary of the Bill's third reading.
House File 2614, a bill for an act relating to state government, state health care programs, continuing care, children and family services, etc.
Discussion of the bill. Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll and read passage of House File 2614.
Have all senators voted who desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes and 18 nays, the bill is repassed as amended by conference. Reverting to the third order of business, messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments of concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2725, a bill for an act relating to public safety, establishing a certification process for multi-jurisdictional gang and drug task forces. Senate File 2725 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Sir Moi.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments, but the House of Senate File 2725, and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. On motions and resolutions, there is a resolution to be read.
Senator Pogemiller introduces Senate Resolution Number 198, a Senate resolution relating to rules.
Refer to the Committee on Rules Administration.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I'd move a brief recess for the purposes of appointing a conference committee.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is recessed to the call of the chair.
Mr. President.
Senate will come to order. Senator Paul Gamiller.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
There's a privilege report at the desk. The Secretary will read the privilege report.
Senator Pogamiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 2725. Senators Moi, Dibble, Torres-Ray, Chaudhry, and Coring. Senator Pogamiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Remaining in the order of motions and resolutions, there are two resolutions to be read.
Senator Bonoff introduces Senate Resolution 196, a Senate resolution recognizing District Court Judge Charles A. Porter, Jr. for 30 years of service.
Refer to the Committee on Rules Administration.
And Senators Bonoff and Foley introduce Senate Resolution Number 197, Senate Resolution honoring Superintendent Susan K. Hintz on her retirement from Osseo Area Schools.
Refer to the Committee on Rules Administration. Okay. That completes the work at the desk. 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, the following members will be excused from parts of today's session. Senator Jay Dahl from 11 a.m. to 11:35 a.m. Senator Ortman from 11 a.m. to 11:55 a.m. Senator Jungbauer from 11 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. Senator Parasol from 8 o'clock p.m. until the end. Senator Berglund from 8:30 p.m. to 8:55 p.m. Senator Scheid from 9:45 to 10:30 p.m. Other announcements of Senate interest. Announcements of Senate interest.
Mr. President.
Where?
Mr. President, Mr. President, members, tomorrow will come in at 1 p.m., and I will yield to Senator Senjum before I make the motion.
Senator Senjum.
Senator Pogamiller, members, although you're not invited, Senator Pogamiller, the Senate Republicans will caucus at 12:30 in the conference room, in the SOB, relative to tomorrow's bills.
Any other announcements of Senate interest? Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, Senator Senjum, there may be a Rules Committee meeting tomorrow before session. It would be relatively brief, but or it might be after we come into session. Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn till May 13th, 1 p.m.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned until Thursday, May 13th at 1 p.m.